Yes Live Show. In the show, I talk to a huge range of experts about aspects of integrative medicine for cancer, or integrative oncology as it's called, a recent development that combines conventional techniques with a broad spectrum of complementary and alternative medicine methods to extend care and improve results. This week, I'm looking at a very popular integrative medicine choice and an established technique at the heart of many practitioners' integrative medicine protocols, high-dose vitamin C. Traditionally, this has been delivered intravenously, but recent developments have brought further options, all of which I shall explore with today's guest, an expert and author on the subject, Dr. Thomas Levy. Today I'm going to be speaking to him over Skype in Denver, Colorado. Good afternoon, Dr. Levy.
Good afternoon, Robin. How are you?
I'm really well, thank you. Great to be able to talk to you today on the Yes to Life show.
Well, I'm glad to be here.
So, vitamin C has at this point been linked to cancer for some decades. Here in the UK, Cancer Research UK, which is the leading charity involved in cancer research, in March this year states emphatically, to date, there is no clinical evidence to show that high-dose vitamin C can treat cancer. And they go on to say that high doses can cause a number of side effects and may limit the effectiveness of radiotherapy and chemotherapy. So I'd like to know whether you think this is a fair and balanced view of the current research into this subject.
Well, no, it's neither fair nor balanced, and it's indicative that whoever is in charge of saying that is either intentionally or inadvertently completely ignorant of a huge amount of research in the literature. Vitamin C in many different patients, I'm not saying as a routine, but in many different patients, has absolutely cured a wide variety of different cancers. Now, I'm not advocating that it ever be used as monotherapy, but certainly many people that have used it on their own have resolved their cancer cases and have lived long lives afterwards. Now, as I'm sure you well know, cancer is a very multifactorial type of condition. And what might be a cancer in one person that you treat in one way, you won't treat the same way in another way. But there's no doubt that chemotherapy is a huge money monster on this planet. And I can't help but question the motivations of people that make statements like that when what I'm saying is hiding in plain sight in the literature.
Okay, fair enough. So obviously you're a great advocate of vitamin C for a whole wide range of health problems, and you've written a book about it titled Curing the Incurable. So this show is all about cancer, so that's our particular interest today. Could you give us a brief overview of the history of vitamin C as a cancer therapy?
Well, vitamin C from the late 1930s on never got directly aimed at cancer therapy, but as an antioxidant, it repairs oxidative damage throughout the body. And as it turns out, 100% of all chronic degenerative diseases, cancer included, are characterized by increased oxidative stress at the cellular and intracellular level, which means that regardless of what causes the condition, vitamin C can always be expected to, at the very least, give some degree of symptomatic relief. And when you're able to intentionally or inadvertently remove the source of ongoing stress, usually an infection focally or different toxins seeding different parts of the body, when you're able to eliminate that, oftentimes then the added presence of vitamin C, along with other supplements and attention to diet, can resolve a cancer. Now, Dr. Frederick Klenner in the 1940s was really the first person to pick up the baton, if you will, and start using vitamin C in therapeutic fashion, you know, not just trying to take a little bit every day because it's good for you, but to use it to actually resolve illnesses. And he demonstrated in his research and in his office that he was able to resolve a wide variety of viral conditions considered to be incurable today and for which they only offer vaccine therapy. But you name it, polio, measles, mumps, vitamin C in high multigram doses intravenously, intramuscularly, and orally have resolved all these conditions quite quickly, quite promptly. But probably where vitamin C comes into its best role with cancer is it's also the ultimate antitoxin. All toxins, 100% of them, inflict their damage by oxidizing or causing to be oxidized. That's loss of electrons, basically rust of the body, if you will, okay, of critical biomolecules throughout the body. And it might do one type of biomolecule for one toxin, one type of biomolecule for another, and that's how you get your variety of disease presentations. But vitamin C will help neutralize a toxin, and it'll help reverse the oxidative damage that the toxin caused. And at the cellular level, this is exactly what's going on with cancer. You have different reasons for causing it, but they all have increased oxidative stress, and they're usually involved with people that have also been taking a large amount of calcium through their lives. I'll talk about that in a moment. Hmm. So probably in the late 1960s, Dr. Hugh Reardon picked up the baton from Dr. Klenner. He has since passed, but he has a clinic in Wichita, Kansas. And he never tried to promote himself as treating cancer, just treating the patient that has cancer, since, as you know, it's a very politically volatile issue.
Right.
And in the course of that, he just gave very large doses, 40, 50, 60 grams or more of vitamin C intravenously, on a number of different schedules. Many of these patients just started resolving their advanced cancers. So, as I said before, many people can do a great deal of good for themselves with vitamin C as a monotherapy. But if you're really serious about your cancer or your other chronic degenerative disease, there are a number of factors that need to be take place, including removing toxins and stopping daily toxin insults, along with trying to stop and repair the damage that's already been done.
Right. Okay, so there's been quite a bit of progress recently, I understand, in getting to grips with what the various mechanisms are involved in intravenous vitamin C therapy. Could you tell us the effects, as far as we currently understand, that vitamin C is having both on healthy cells and on cancer cells?
That's a good question, and it's probably the primary thing that differentiates vitamin C from chemotherapy as such. Vitamin C, by the mechanisms that I'll discuss, can kill and does kill cancer cells, while at the same time strengthening normal cells. Chemotherapy kills cancer cells and also does a similar amount of damage to normal cells in the immune system. Mm. Now, the reason that this is felt to occur is that for a number of reasons, the cancer cell, like a pathogen, like a pathogenic microbe, needs iron to thrive upon. So the more iron you have in your system, the more likely to go cancer cells, the more likely you're to promote infections. The excess of iron is a characteristic of cancer cells, and also at the same time, for reasons unclear, many cancer cells lose the ability to make catalase, which is an enzyme that breaks down hydrogen peroxide, which is present in your cells, but usually kept at very low levels by catalase. So you have a cancer cell with high levels of peroxide, high levels of iron, and the way that you increase oxidative stress, either by chemotherapy or by vitamin C, you increase oxidative stress inside the cell to the point that it undergoes apoptosis or, frankly, ruptures. Now, what vitamin C does is with the high levels of iron, the vitamin C, as an antioxidant, donates an electron to ferrous 3+ to make it 2+. That means that that ferric ion, that iron ion, has an extra electron that it can now donate to hydrogen peroxide and break it down into hydroxyl radical, which is the most potent oxidizing agent on the planet. And when this is done with any amount of dosage, the intracellular oxidative stress rises rapidly and the cell either ruptures or goes into programmed cell death. However, normal cells don't have this increased amount of iron and the increased amount of peroxide. And so all vitamin C does is support their normal metabolism and strengthen the cell. So vitamin C then has this dual mechanism by which it can kill cancer cells while at the same time strengthening normal cells, and for that matter, strengthen the immune system, because vitamin C stimulates healthy immune functions by at least 20 different mechanisms. And this is itemized in the book that you talked about earlier. So chemotherapy does nothing but kill everything, okay? And so that's why people get so sick on it, because it's killing their cancer cells and it's killing and making sick their normal cells, whereas just the opposite is occurring with vitamin C. And this is also a reason why, a very good reason why, even the hard-headed oncologists that just won't review this data with any scientific integrity should stop opposing vitamin C, because it's still the best and most appropriate adjunctive thing to use with your chemotherapy. So if you're hell-bent to use chemotherapy, vitamin C is going to do nothing but make that chemotherapy more effective, further help kill the cancer cells while repairing the damage the chemotherapy has been doing to the normal cells.
Right. Well, that's certainly a topic I want to go into in a bit more detail later if we can. Can I just go back a step? You talked about the cancer cells having an excess of iron. Why? Where does it come from?
Well, for reasons unclear, cancer cells, just like pathogens in the very same fashion, they accumulate iron to accelerate their metabolic processes. I can't tell you why it occurs. I could just tell you it does occur.
I see.
The cancer cell will actually develop specific channels in the cell membrane to further facilitate getting a hold of iron. So it's a well-established phenomenon, but it, with reference to your question, I'm not sure it's so well-established as to answer the question, why does the cancer cell do it?
But it's some necessity that it has to actually have.
Right. Cancer. As a matter of fact, in the evolution or transformation of a normal cell into a malignant cell, it's the increasing levels of iron inside the cell that are one of the primary preconditions to what's called malignant transformation. If you don't get the iron level up, you don't develop a cancerous cell. It's that simple.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So can we now go on and talk about dosages? Most researchers have emphasized the need for very high doses to achieve any effect. And indeed, trials that are often quoted as evidence of lack of effect often turn out to have used low oral doses. Can you explain why high doses are needed and how they need to be delivered?
Well, you know, everybody doesn't require the same amount of vitamin C. I will tell you that certainly when you take vitamin C in 50 gram, 75 gram, 100 gram doses intravenously over a course of treatments, most likely you're going to get a positive effect much more quickly and much more assuredly when you continue this regimen. However, it needs to be emphasized, and this is completely ignored or glossed over even in the vitamin C literature, is that very many people, let's call them, I call them vitamin C virgins. They've never really supplemented with vitamin C in their life. They can just start getting on 4 or 5 or 6 grams of oral vitamin C a day, and very many of them, I'm not going to give you a percentage, but very many of them will resolve their medical issues. So vitamin C can help many people at a wide range of doses, but you must give yourself your best assurance of this positive effect by not only taking the large doses, but also taking vitamin C in multiple forms.
Okay.
One form is the liposome encapsulated vitamin C. They're tiny microscopic balls of fat. They get a high absorption from the gut, and they still stay in this form until they actually deliver the vitamin C inside the cell, both in the cells around the body and in the immune cells. This, in many ways, is a superior form of biodelivery than intravenous, okay? Because intravenous, they just put in unencapsulated vitamin C inside your blood, and it's got to use all the normal mechanisms to get inside the cell. When it's coated with a liposome, and the liposome is one of the natural delivery systems that the body actually uses on its own for other things, you can get the vitamin C directly inside the cell without the consumption of energy. Mm. So that's why some people can see, sometimes, depending on their unique condition, an even better response to liposome encapsulated C orally than vitamin C intravenously. Mm. Now, I'm not advocating one versus the other. I'm saying if you're serious about your medical condition, in this case your cancer, you want to take as many different forms of vitamin C and as high a dosage as possible for as long a period of time as you can. So that's liposome encapsulated vitamin C, 3, 4, 5, 10 grams orally. That's intravenous vitamin C when you can get a hold of it. There's a fat-soluble form of vitamin C called ascorbyl palmitate, which gives you support against oxidative stress in your fatty cell membranes. And finally, there's ordinary vitamin C, which has been doing a huge amount of good for three quarters of a century in the form of ascorbic acid or sodium ascorbate powder. Mm. And when you take this on a regular basis, you neutralize a lot of the toxicity in the gut, and you keep vitamin C coming in by that mechanism as well and getting inside the immune systems around the gut. Mm.
Well, look, very interesting. I mean, this is definitely one of the things I'm interested to explore. I was mainly thinking the two versions that we tend to support people in using, which is the intravenous or the liposomal. But you've actually been through four different types there, including the original powdered. And you're actually advocating that all of these have got a place in helping people who've got cancer, which is fascinating. So just wanted to go back a step and just get to how these different techniques have evolved. Correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is that the original reason for the intravenous treatment was simply that there is a limit to the amount of ordinary powdered vitamin C that people can take through their gut, and they simply won't absorb it after a certain point. And so there was a need to get higher doses in, and that was the route that was taken. Am I right?
Yes, no, that's absolutely true, Robin. Many people can take just maybe one teaspoon of powder, which is 4 grams, mm-hmm. and then immediately have loose, runny diarrhea. And even though their body might require 30, 40, 50 grams or more, they're never going to get that dose inside them by going the oral route. On the other hand, there are also a group of patients that can very readily take 20, 30, 40 grams of vitamin C powder and not have the bile effect, and they can get in without having to go to intravenous a lot more vitamin C inside their system over time. Hmm. So as we started saying from the outset, you know, everybody's a little bit different. There are so doggone many different factors inside cancer. We can't presume to know which one is most prominent in a given person. But you're quite correct in saying the high doses of vitamin C intravenously probably came because of the intolerance of the oral form. Hmm. Now, I don't know for sure, and I wish I knew, how Dr. Frederick Klenner, back in the early 1940s, shortly after vitamin C was discovered by the Nobel Prize winner Dr. Albert St. Georgi, I have no idea what was going on in Dr. Klenner's mind to suddenly decide to put vitamin C into an intravenous form and start giving 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 gram infusions or more, and then start getting the remarkable results that he got. So he has some sort of insight. I wish I knew his reasoning, but we know empirically that it's safe and that it works.
Right. That's a very important point, isn't it? Actually, the safety profile of vitamin C is extremely good, isn't it?
Well, as I like to say, it's a cute way to refer to something, but it's absolutely true. When people talk about toxicity, well, toxicity means something at a certain point in time either gets you sick or kills you. I mean, that's the ultimate LD50, the lethal dose at 50% dies, okay? Mm-hmm. Well, there is no defined toxic dose of vitamin C, None. Right. I mean, vitamin C in people that already have kidney disease has to be taken with some caution, just like every other medicine on the planet. You don't give anything to a kidney failure patient without monitoring in regard to dosage. But in normal people with normal kidney function, vitamin C has no defined toxicity, and you can take as much as you want. Now, compare that to water. You can drink a couple gallons of water in 10 or 15 minutes and kill yourself because you dilute out your electrolytes, you cause cerebral edema, and there are many described reports in the literature of usually neurotic people or psychotically deranged people that get water drinking compulsions, but you can very readily and very reliably kill yourself by drinking too much water. So I like to say vitamin C is safer than water.
That's certainly a good testimonial for it. Okay, so just going back to the sort of history of the development, the liposome has come along much more recently, and this has now enabled people to orally take much higher doses than they might otherwise have tolerated of the powdered form. Well, not just that they're higher doses, but when you take a certain amount, it actually increases your levels of vitamin C much more readily than the powdered form. Is that a fair understanding?
Yes, but I would qualify that to say it increases the levels inside your cell much better. Right. I mean, nothing is going to increase the levels inside your blood as well as an IV. I mean, if you take 50 grams IV, you've got 50 grams in your blood. Right. Now, you might excrete a lot of it, and 6 hours later, you might not have that much vitamin C left in your system, but you deliver it inside the body. Now, in the case of the liposomes, like I alluded to earlier, the liposomes are made with super microscopic spheres of fat that are literally the same coating that is present normally in your cells. It's phosphatidylcholine and what's called a bilipid layer, and you actually form what was initially designed to be an artificial cell in research. And then later on, they saw that this artificial cell could encapsulate agents, and when you took it orally or intravenously, because they would do that in experimentation, they found that these liposomes would go up to cells and literally attach to the cells and merge with the cell, become part of the cell wall membrane, and then deposit their contents inside. Or they were so small that they would actually pass through pre-existing pores inside the cell and then do this same thing of merging and depositing what they had inside by going directly to mitochondria, directly to endoplasmic reticula, directly to the nucleus. So you had something that even though you took it orally, you were getting a better delivery deep inside the cell than if you took it unencapsulated intravenously.
Very interesting. So recapping on your point about the fact that these different types all have different merits and can therefore all have a place within supporting one person, it's a bit of a case of try them out, see how your system responds to them. Is that correct? And how would you compare, for example, having intravenous and liposomal to know how much to do of each? Or would you just have to take an educated guess at it?
Pretty much an educated guess, which is also known as, you know, clinical evaluation. Basically, you have how you feel. In the case of an infection, do you have a fever? Are you feeling poorly? Energy. And then you have laboratory data. Okay. I mean, when you're improving the parameters of infection or you're improving the parameters of increased oxidative stress, and these are reflected in your blood sugar, your cholesterol, your triglycerides, your white blood count, your C-reactive protein, an indicator of systemic inflammation. When all these things are out of whack and you start taking your vitamin C and you recheck it down the road and they're improving or normalizing, you know you're doing enough. On the other hand, if you see no change, that would be a reason to take more. most people develop what I call a health awareness the longer they supplement vitamin C. By that I mean, you never really know, in my opinion, how good health feels until you supplement a substantial amount of vitamin C on a regular basis. Then you just have that extra energy, that extra sense of well-being. And when you're in that zone, if you will, you can detect very quickly when you're getting an infection stress or an exposure to a toxin, because you don't feel bad, but you feel less good. Okay. And so people that supplement vitamin C a long time, in my opinion, across the board, develop a very keen awareness of what good health, truly good health, feels like. And more importantly, when you start to lose 5 or 10 or 15% of it, you know very quickly, and then you can do something to address that issue, increase your C, take other supplements, whatever the case may be, depending on what's threatening you. So, getting back to your primary question about dosage, there is no magic dosage, okay? Most people, I say, are limited by their physical access to whether or not to get in an IV or to their pocketbook. I mean, vitamin C powder is still very inexpensive. And if somebody can't afford an IV or thinks the liposomal vitamin C is too pricey, they should get on sodium ascorbate powder, figure out what their bowel tolerance is, what it takes to get to a diarrheal movement, and take 3/4 to 7/8 of that dose on a daily basis. And then any time they have the opportunity to take an additional form of vitamin C, they should do it. And very many people will resolve their conditions or render them asymptomatic by taking one form of vitamin C and pushing it to its maximal dose. But I have the multi-C protocol in place because there's certainly a lot of people out there that still don't get the result they want by maxing out the dose of one form. And when that occurs, the more the merrier. The goal is, I like to use the phrase, the goal is you want your body to reach and maintain a state of ascorbate vitamin C saturation. Because literally in every cell of your body, it's the vitamin C that is the literal fuel on which your body runs. Your body runs on electrons, and reduced and oxidized vitamin C continues a brisk relay or flow of electrons through all the cells of your body. When the vitamin C levels get low or the oxidized levels of vitamin C increase, that electron flow slows, microcurrents inside the cells diminish, transmembrane voltages across the membrane decline, and you get a chronically sick cell. So that's pretty much the nut with vitamin C. But I must say, though, in the case of cancer, even if we don't have a chance to discuss it very much, probably the biggest factor in cancer is the source of the oxidative stress that caused the malignant transformation. In other words, I already said increased oxidative stress is always present, and vitamin C can help deal with that. But that doesn't address where the increased oxidative stress came from. And I'm going to tell you, greater than 90% of the time, the bulk of that oxidative stress came from oral cavity infections in the form of asymptomatic infected teeth, infected root canal treated teeth, and chronic gum disease. And this is all very well documented in the literature and still very well ignored.
Well, that is something that certainly some quite well-known practitioners around the world set great store by oral health for their cancer patients, don't they? And they obviously know the reasons for it that you do. Okay, well, look, that's not the subject of this program, unfortunately. It's another whole program there. But you mentioned the fact that, yes, powdered vitamin C is dead cheap. And so that is a great bonus because, as you say, anyone can afford to take the maximum amount they can take without actually upsetting their gut. But The same substance is used for the intravenous. And one of the criticisms that's often leveled at IV vitamin C is the cost of treatment. You know, they say, well, look, vitamin C doesn't cost anything. Why are people paying thousands of pounds to get themselves treated with intravenous vitamin C? Maybe you could explain why it's a costly process.
Well, I mean, it's no costlier than any other IV. Most practitioners charge whatever the basic charge is for an IV, and depending on your practitioner, like in the United States, that'll be somewhere between $100 and $250. And the rest of the expense is the vitamin C, which for probable political reasons is my suspicion, has been increasing astronomically in price over the last 5 years.
All right.
I mean, 5 years ago, you could get 25 grams of vitamin C for injection for $6 or $7. Hmm. Now, in many places, it costs $75 to $80.
Wow.
So somebody out there, in my opinion, knows that vitamin C is making a difference. And rather than try to take the bold step of just finding ways to ban vitamin C, they're just going to increase its expense astronomically until it's a comparable expense of regular chemotherapy.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So can we come back to this kind of age-old criticism that in the UK, at least, it still regularly gets leveled at vitamin C and other antioxidants, that they can make conventional oxidative therapies, such as chemotherapy, less effective. That's what Cancer Research UK is saying still. Can you tell us how you see things?
Well, I can tell you that's completely false. And what happens is, and I don't know, I might take some of the blame for this, because maybe 10 years ago I started talking on different forums about the fact that vitamin C can neutralize chemotherapy. That's because chemotherapy is a pro-oxidant toxic medicine, and vitamin C is an antioxidant. Hmm. So if the two meet in the blood at the same time, before either gets into the tissues, the vitamin C, to some degree, can neutralize and lessen the impact of that one particular dose of chemotherapy. Now, having said that, if you just take the chemotherapy at point A and take the vitamin C 3 hours later at point B, not only is that not an issue, the vitamin C, like I talked about earlier in the program, makes the chemotherapy more potent because it not only contributes to killing cancer cells on its own, but it immediately goes in and starts repairing the damage that the chemotherapy has done to the normal cells. So it's absolutely 100% bunk. And anybody that says that, all I can say is they're either woefully misinformed and unwilling to look at the literature, or they're lying. They've even done studies in the past few years that have shown combined chemotherapy and vitamin C are substantially more effective than chemotherapy alone.
Okay. So can we just look into something that I've quite often come across, the fact that vitamin C, yes, it's an antioxidant, but I've read that one of the things that's associated with giving a high enough dose is that it actually changes from being an antioxidant to being a pro-oxidant at a certain level. Can you say anything about that?
Yes, this is another, if you will, misunderstanding about vitamin C. And on its face, it's a fiction. Let me tell you what happens. Vitamin C, as a electron-replete antioxidant, can only do one thing. That's either nothing or contribute electrons. It can't take electrons away from anything. And it's only when you take electrons away from something that you oxidize it. Now, what happens when you take, for many people, when you take 50 grams of vitamin C intravenously fairly quickly, basically you could have one of four scenarios occur. One is you feel better than you've ever felt before.
Mm-hmm.
Number two is if you have a large cancer inside your body that's got a large physical mass and is exquisitely sensitive to the vitamin C, you can start killing cancer cells so quickly that they start lysing and they start producing a large amount of pro-oxidant debris inside your blood, and you can feel sicker even though you're killing cancer cells.
Could I just ask you to explain the word lysing, because it's not commonly used?
I'm sorry. Lyse means the cancer cells rupture and break apart.
Right.
Okay. The third scenario is if you have a significant infection inside your body, whether it's viral or bacterial, just like the cancer cells, the viruses and the bacteria feed on iron. So if you take a large amount of vitamin C and you start lysing viruses and you start killing the other pathogens, you also release a large amount of iron into the blood as well as other pro-oxidant debris. I might add, too, that this is a biggie with cancer cells, because you lyse the cancer cells, you not only release other pro-oxidant debris, you release a large amount of iron. Hmm. And the fourth scenario is when you're older and you've accumulated multiple toxins over time and you start getting vitamin C intravenously for the first time, there can be a certain point at which the vitamin C gets inside your cells and starts reducing or repairing oxidized enzymes, antioxidant enzymes and detoxification enzymes. And when they get reduced and repaired, they become active again. And when they become active again, they start kicking toxins out of the cell. So even though you're doing something positive with the vitamin C, you're releasing a lot of toxins, and this can cause you to feel bad. So you have the four scenarios where you feel great, number one. Number two, you start rupturing cancer cells and you feel worse, or you start killing pathogens and you feel worse, or you start detoxifying your cells and you feel worse. All of it is because vitamin C is doing what it needs to do. And that's where clinical expertise comes in, where you adjust the dose, you slow the rate of infusion, and there's a lot of things you can do that can completely eliminate this detox type of pro-oxidant side effect, but it still has nothing to do with vitamin C being a pro-oxidant. Vitamin C, under those three circumstances, can have a pro-oxidant effect, but it's still always an antioxidant.
I see. Okay, well, that's very useful. That's something I've never clearly understood, and that's put it very clearly. Okay, so as you say, there's obviously a lot to actually creating individual protocols depending on a patient's response to treatment.
Yes, sir. No, it's always an individualized process, because you absolutely, to my knowledge, have no way of predicting 100% for sure how a given patient is going to clinically respond to a protocol. And from the clinician's point of view and from the patient's point of view, if you have a protocol, it doesn't matter how effective it is. If the patient feels sick as a dog every day when they leave the office, there's probably not going to be very good compliance.
No.
So you need to find a way. You need to find a way to kill cancer cells and have the patient feeling well at the end of the day when they leave the office. Mm. Ironically enough, one of the ways to do this is what I call the mop-up IV vitamin C. Now, I just told you that when you take a large amount of vitamin C, take it very quickly, and in a sensitive person, you'll start killing cancer cells and rupturing them and releasing iron and all other sort of pro-oxidants, and the patient will feel lousy. Well, guess what? You know how you treat that and you get the patient feeling better before you leave the office? You use the same thing that caused the problem. The vitamin C at a high dose ruptured the cancer cells. You follow it with an infusion of a much lower dose of vitamin C, given more slowly. And what this does is it's not in high enough concentration to go and kill more cancer cells, but it's in a high enough concentration to immediately meet and mop up and neutralize the pro-oxidant debris in the blood, and people start feeling better rapidly. So just changing the rate and the amount changes the clinical effect of the vitamin C.
Interesting. Okay. You referred earlier on to the fact that you wouldn't really recommend anybody does vitamin C as that's it, that's your cancer treatment. You'd certainly make it part of some sort of broad integrative program. Typically, what kind of other therapies are you combining vitamin C with?
Well, as I alluded to before, and of course it's much beyond what we can talk about here, but in my clinical opinion and take on the research and what I've seen over the last 20 years is most cancers start in the mouth. So the mouth has to be addressed. Oral infections need to be addressed. Now, that's a quick summary of a very complex subject, but yes, you need to address the mouth because, as my mentor, Dr. Huggins, told me 20 years ago, you can't dry off while you're still in the shower. Right. So if what's causing your cancer is continuing to stream in on a daily basis, and you're trying to repair it without trying to stop what's causing it, there's not much hope of long-term success. Mm-hmm. So you address the mouth, number one. Number two, supplements are very important. There's what I call the big four, which is magnesium, vitamin K, vitamin C, and vitamin D. Each one of these supplements, independently taken by itself, decreases all-cause mortality. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that they all lessen the toxic loads of calcium that we have inside our cells. Calcium, the way it's ingested by supplement form and throughout this planet in excess dairy, is one of the primary carcinogens we have out there. And I address this in another book called Death by Calcium. But when you don't find ways to mobilize your calcium, you don't find ways to lower your calcium intake, these are very strong forces that keep malignant transformation in place. So finally, and this again is a very quick summarization, it's very, very critical, especially when you're dealing with an older patient, to measure and adjust their sex hormones and their thyroid hormone, both testosterone or estrogen in the female and thyroid are super critical for determining whether focal infections take hold. And focal infections, vis-a-vis the mouth, are one of the main reasons why cancers begin in the first place. So clinicians can't throw up their arms and say, oh, it's too complex, I don't want to deal with it, or I saw this study that shows that testosterone increases heart attack and his estrogen increases cancer. That's all bunk if you do it correctly. Because when you have abnormally low testosterone, abnormally low estrogen, abnormally low thyroid, you are going to increase your chance of death from all causes. Mm. So you're already suffering from an increased chance of death. So for goodness sakes, find a doctor who's willing to take the time and put you on tiny doses, very slow to increase the dose, bioidentical forms, and only shoot for low normal to mid-normal ranges, and you'll not only do great, you'll live longer, and all the other things that you're using to try to treat your cancer will suddenly become incredibly more effective.
Mm. Okay, that's all very interesting. Thank you. So we're getting to the end of the show. I just wanted to ask, aside from the kind of media spin, the status of popular integrated strategies such as vitamin C is really changing all the time as new research comes in. I've heard some recent comment that some of the most recent research that we have points more to vitamin C as a controller of cancer than as a treatment of cancer. So that's, it does a great job as long as you're using it, but in terms of ending the situation, it's maybe not as effective as people thought. Is that something that you understand, or would you disagree with that?
No, I would disagree with that completely. Based on what I just went over with you a few moments ago, the reason why you get a response to something and then you lose the response when you start backing off or not continuing on it is because you haven't identified the infectious toxic source that that person is being exposed to on a daily basis. That's the primary causative reason for the cancer and the chronic degenerative disease. Cancer just doesn't spontaneously, a lot of people think this, but cancer just doesn't appear for no reason at all. It appears for very clear biological reasons, and it's invariably due to a toxin source that's continuing to bombard your body on a daily basis, endogenous or exogenous, but it's coming in on a daily basis. And until you address that, you can't look to have a long-term cure. But you might have something that's actually good enough, ozone, vitamin C, to make the cancer completely go away. And then lo and behold, 2 or 3 years later, it comes back or you get a new cancer. Right. That's because you didn't address why the cancer started in the first place.
Right. So you're laying the blame for recurrence in those cases somewhere other than a shortcoming of vitamin C itself.
Oh, absolutely. No question.
Okay. All right. Well, look, I think we're going to have to call it a day there. Very many thanks indeed for sharing your expertise on this therapy. The public's increasingly aware of it, and it continues to have an important place in integrative cancer care. So it's great to hear a bit more expert opinion on it.
Okay. My pleasure. I hope we continue to get the word out, because people are looking for effective treatments, and there aren't that many out there if you don't know what you're looking for.
Okay, many thanks.
Okay, thank you, Robin. Take care.
As I said in the introduction, vitamin C is an increasingly popular option for people with cancer who are looking outside of the box at conventional medicine. And as you will have heard today, there are good grounds for this, based on the evidence base, the safety profile, and the clinical experience of doctors such as Dr. Levy. To find resources linked to the material in today's show, please look at the Yes to Life website. That's yestolife.org.uk, yestolife.org.uk. Choose Media Centre in the left-hand sidebar, and then choose UK Health Radio. Keep up with developments at Yes to Life on Facebook and Twitter, and you can also follow me, Robin Daly. And do sign up for the brilliant blog on the Yes to Life website. A couple of forthcoming events you may want to note. On the 27th of September, Lizzie Davis is leading a Yes to Life workshop called Get Moving, which is an introduction to cancer rehabilitation through exercise. She'll be joined by yoga expert Vicky Fox. The workshop will take place at the Healthy Living Centre in Pitfield Street, which is near Old Street Tube in London. As ever, we shall have a stand at CAM Expo in September on the 24th and 25th. And on the Saturday morning, we shall be hosting a keynote talk by oncologist Professor Rob Thomas and nutritionist Liz Butler. Also, our flagship London conference will be on the 19th of November in central London, and it's titled Cancer as a Metabolic Epigenetic Disease. Next week, I shall be looking into another popular integrative medicine approach, hypothermia. And to do this, I shall be speaking to two leading experts in Germany, Dr. Simbus and Professor Weiner. I hope you'll join me again. Goodbye.